don't know how familiar you are, Lauren, with how we start the show,
Saints Go Marching
but
In. Yes.
we do the
Okay,
Saints go
so
marching in.
do you do it a lot slower after a loss? Or I don't
No, at
know.
the end we do it slower
Okay.
after
It
loss.
felt
The
like
outro
it felt
is sad horns
Okay.
after a
But
loss, but the
we can do it
intro
up tempo this time.
we can do it up
Yeah,
tempo.
okay.
And so you are free to join us. We do it with mouth horns. And so if everyone is ready to go, three, two, one. Hey everyone, welcome to City Saint Country Saint. I'm your co-host Charles Starr. Joining me, it is a sad day. It is a sad day again as the Saints have once again stepped in it and fall to 5-7. This is episode, I guess it's week 13, so it's episode 14. With me as always in our now over 50% sad openings, my friend L. Ron Mexico. Ron, how are you doing?
As a natural empath, I think that I feel like this is how Lions fans probably felt during the Barry Sanders era, because like you got all this talent and it's just wasting away with terrible quarterback and coaching. That's how I feel right now. Like they felt, yeah.
I don't think we have any singular talent like Barry Sanders. I don't want to be struck by lightning by pretending we have that, but it is rough. It is rough because every week I mentally prepare myself for something good to happen. I try to the secret it into the world, and then I always get this. But fortunately, there's always someone happy when you do a podcast like this, because either it's us in our cruel enjoyment, or we have a guest who is getting ready to celebrate. And this week we have with us always an organizational friend of the show, Defector. And with us this week is Michigan's own Lauren. I should have cleared whether how to pronounce your
It's
last
pronounced
name.
just like Tyson. So
Oh,
Tyson.
Lauren
Lauren
Tyson is
Tyson. Hell
here.
yeah.
So everyone, say hello to Lauren. Was Lauren, how are you doing?
I'm doing really good. I mean, I was happy going into this, and as you guys know this, but I've now spent like the last 10 minutes running around the Defector offices looking for a place that does not have construction noise or reverb. I'm right next to an elevator shaft now, which is very exciting.
I like it. There's a little bit of
And
tension.
there's still the sound issues were still not completely solved, but it's an adrenaline thing. It's like I know this isn't live, but it's a live radio thing that I'm feeling off the back of a very nerve-wracking Lions win that should not have been so nerve-wracking. But I'm still in the mindset of I'll take them however they come.
Yeah, I can't believe there was any tension in that game. Obviously, we put this out only in audio to give people minimal exposure to my face, but we record with video, and like getting the tour of the Defector offices was really nice. I kept hoping like that there would be like a cameo, like David Roth skulking across the back like Hitchcock or something, or Barry or Maitre or anyone. Really, if anyone was walking in the background, that would have been a treat.
Hopefully, if anyone shows up right now, and this is like shared office space, it's not just our own place. So if anyone shows up right now, they're gonna see my whole rig and not really know what I'm doing or why I'm talking about Jahmyr Gibbs, but we'll just power through.
I think I like to think of it as those old ESPN commercials where, it could be just anyone. Like Brooklynite waves to the
Or
camera
like
as an
Otto the
artist.
Orange just kind of shows up, yeah.
So you are a Michigan native,
Correct.
right? I feel like a Spartan based on past writings?
No, my parents and my brother both went to Michigan State, but I went to the University of Michigan.
Oh, okay. I feel I feel like that explains you wearing Spartan gear anyway, but I thought you were a Michigan State person. So you're also excited for the Wolverine.
Yeah. It's
this is a good weekend.
That, like, the Michigan versus everybody thing, like, I think we've all, as fans, experienced that thing where, like, a team just kind of decides that everyone is against them for no reason, and it's always annoying, except when it's you, and it's so much fun. It's so awesome to be the you in the you versus everybody. I'm almost a little disappointed they're playing Bama, though, because people don't want Bama to win, but otherwise, got a Lake mindset.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think Bama is somehow the enemy this time because of a surprising amount of sympathy for Florida State.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bama's like the Duke to me. I just like of basketball. Like I just hate them.
I've had trouble hating the good SEC teams because they actually are good and they seem like they should be good. It's something about football uniforms depersonalizing everyone, whereas with Duke you're like, that guy looks like an asshole.
Yeah
I've never really had a problem with any like individual Alabama players, I suppose. It's just Saban at the head of it.
That's true. There's no Grayson Allen on Alabama.
AJ McCarron felt like a Grayson
Or Greg McElroy, like,
yeah, like everyone, not all of their quarterbacks, because but every one of their white quarterbacks looked like he went to the, you know, asshole camp across the lake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you been like a big sports person your whole life, or did you go in and out of sports fandom?
Yeah, I didn't really know that I was going to be a sports writer until I started working at Deadspin as an intern. That was like when I was like 22, so it wasn't like a career thing for me so much, but I can't remember a time when I didn't love sports. There's like the Red Wings were like a big dynasty when I was like very, very little. Like I was born in 95 and they went back to back in 97, 98, and there's like home movie footage of me like naming all the roster and their numbers around like 98, 99. And so it's like, it kind of like predates my memory, me just like having some sort of fascination with sports.
This is going to be a surprise, but until I kind of gave up pro hockey for marital, lack of marital discord, I was a Red Wings fan my whole life. I picked the Red Wings when I was a kid, and to give you some perspective, I was in law school during those Stanley Cups. I lived through the Dead Wings years where they were really bad. And I remember when they drafted Yzerman and how exciting that was.
Do you ever make it out to the Joe?
No, I don't think I've been to Michigan at all. Oh. I drove cross country, and so I don't even think I did, though. I think I drove south of Michigan. I'd have to look at a map again and see where the highways are.
You can't just, like, pass through it on accident. What that sound was.
Who's spooking you there?
The elevator motorroom. That wasn't a door. But I'm staring at a door that says elevator motor room, and it just made that noise.
Oh, man.
Oh, this is going to be a fun podcast.
I hope the elevator door is open, and it's like Die Hard, and just there's like a dead body, and it just says, ho, 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 now I have a machine gun. Who knows? Like we could witness something crazy. Who knows? Yeah, we got a fancy elevator. We had a fancy elevator at work, and we had a motor room, and it has all these it's like really hard to be an elevator repairman. There's so much stuff in these things. I had no idea there was that much guts in the elevator. And this has been elevator talk. Sorry to this.
It's now funny to think about, like, the elevator guy leaving and there being a handful of extra parts, like an IKEA desk. And you're like, now I can't get in this.
Yeah. There's so many elevator rules you wouldn't even believe. Because, like, certain elevators you could just use for freight. Some of them are not, like, passenger elevators. And they call those cars, they call it a car. Mm-hmm. Like, this elevator jargon. Yeah. There's a whole elevator world, y'all, we don't even know about. Right? You got to be in that shit to know it. But
That's right. Exciting. We're just civilians in the elevated world.
Yeah. Yes.
Have you guys read The Intuitionist by Colson Whitehead?
No.
No.
It's his first novel, and it takes place in this kind of imagined, like, mid-50s, 60s New York City, where, like, elevator inspectors kind of rule the city in the way that, like, cops normally would. And it kind of takes as its thesis that, like, the elevator is sort of the most important invention of modern times, because you don't have skyscrapers, you don't have any kind of, like, vertical growth without elevators, and it just creates this whole really fascinating kind of noirish world with conspiracies and different factions of elevator inspectors.
I have to read that. Cool. Yeah,
it's good.
So we now have City Saint, Country Saint reading list for everyone out there. The first recommended book is The Intuitionists. Did I remember that? Good, yes. There we go. And so are all of your fandoms local, or do you have any offbeat kind of teams? Because my teams are all weird.
I guess, like, as a blogger, I've been made fun of for, like, kind of just picking up on random teams as I go, just because, like, as someone who writes a lot, I gravitate towards just, like, teams that are interesting and teams that I want to keep talking about. But I would say, like, in my heart, it's the Detroit teams. It will always come back to the Detroit teams and the local teams. But then...
Yeah.
Like, I picked up on the Mets for a while. I picked up on the New York Islanders a little bit for their playoff runs. And, like, here and there, I've, like, gravitated towards teams. But, like, the constant is...
I appreciate, you know, picking teams that are interesting. I always think of Free Darko and his liberated fandom as, like, that, where he just liked teams that were interesting. Not even, you know, not, like, front-running, but, like... There's something interesting schematically that made them kind of stand out from the crowd.
Yeah, that's what fascinates me most as a blogger, is like the work that goes into like taking an average team and making them a little bit above average. Like, I don't find great teams interesting, and I mean bad teams just kind of escape notice. But yeah, that like eighth seed bubble is always really interesting to me.
Are all of your teams local, Ron?
Yeah, except for baseball, and I mean, I like the White Sox growing up because we didn't have no team. And basketball, before we had the Pelicans, it was just like Lauren said, I would kind of gravitate to whatever team was interesting that year or whatever one I liked, just from watching, you know. So that kind of bounced around. I remember liking like the Bucks when they were pretty good with Ray Allen. I really liked the like before the Lakers had the super team. I really liked the Nick Van Exel, like Kobe. Team like before they got rid of Nick and started really catching on, then they became boring to me, you know, stuff like that. I would kind of bounce. I never really liked the Bulls. I didn't really like the Eastern Conference either, because they was like so boring to watch. Like I don't know. Yeah, I could go on and on, but yeah, it changed every year because
I mean the Eastern Conference was real back alley tough guy shit. Like those. Since I'm in New York, I kind of bandwagon those New York teams. I actually was a Laker fan growing up, another team I picked for a weird reason when I was a kid. So I love those Nick Van Exel teams too.
And you were a Laker fan in New York?
Yeah, but I was young and I wasn't in a real basketball crowd.
Okay.
You know, like, and so it didn't matter that much. I mean, the Knicks went through a real long fallow period where kids, my peers, weren't particularly basketball fans. You know, everyone loved the Yankees when they were good and the Mets when they were good, and football is football, and no one cares about hockey except for the diehards. But Knicks, I thought, like, went through a real period where people didn't care until Ewing, and then like people with like those Ewing teams, you know.
Him and Cedric Ceballos, what was it, Elton somebody, and then they had Vlade Divac before Shaq even a little bit, and then they had, Elden Campbell was his name. Yeah. Eddie Jones, I could go, anyway, we don't need to just talk about guys, but yeah, those were fun teams, I really liked them.
Yeah. I know. Does this give you an opening a pack feeling?
Lauren? A little bit, yeah. I love it. I'm just thinking of like NBA Jam.
Yeah,
guys. That's kind of my in to that era.
Yes. That was a good. Our church was so long. We used to have a recess in the middle of it, and we used to walk to this bowling alley and play NBA Jam for like an hour and a half in there. You know, I remember like, and I always wanted Golden State. You know, like they had the best NBA Jam team to me. Mm-hmm. And the Magic too, because the Magic had that little bitty guy. I think they had Scott Skiles, and he was still playing for him. And then you could have Shaq, and it was cool.
I'm too tired to have like free flowing general thoughts.
I was wondering if you're just wanting to avoid talking about that game.
That's usually the second half. I'm not actually trying to avoid it. I am going to, you know, that's really when I get mad about something.
Yeah, but I think I've noticed a theme, though. The more we lose, the longer it takes to talk about the game. And that's progressively been getting... Yeah. When we win, we're talking about the game in like 10 minutes.
I think, yeah. There is that risk. I guess that is as good a segue as anything. Before we actually start talking about the game in earnest, though, we have to kick this off with the only feature, the only actual segment that we do with any of our guests that's planned at all, which is, having beaten us, you get to step on our necks and get our ass.
Get our ass.
Are you ready?
I think.
Are you ready, Lauren, to get our ass?
Hopefully, you can tell in the first 20 minutes of talking to me that like I'm not totally a get their asses type. And
yeah,
I'm trying to be a little humble in victory because like I knew as soon as the Saints were making that comeback that like I was setting myself to get owned so hard if they completed that. So I'm going to try to like keep that in mind. But
that
I don't
is
know
not
the one
the spirit, but I understand
the one thing that I sort of had in mind on that front is like I was thinking about Sam LaPorta a lot, as you guys probably were too. Mm-hmm. The tight end who kind of ran all over the Saints defense, and there was kind of a series of like the Lions drafted Brandon Pettigrew in the first round, and then Eric Ebron, and then later T.J. Hockenson, mm-hmm. and not that you might go so far as to call any of them busts, but they weren't like that sort of superstar tight end that they were really craving. And it's very cool that LaPorta is that type, and it's also really funny to me that I think what sort of kicked that off was like the idea of like him being a, or like one of these tight ends becoming like a Jimmy Graham type, mm-hmm. and for him to, like literally I, you know, blog about sports. I am not someone who is like proud to be ignorant about anything, but like when Jimmy Graham caught that touchdown pass, I was literally like, oh, that's so crazy. They got another tight end named Jimmy Graham. It took like 5 seconds for me to be like, where in the hell did he come back from? Like just the reanimated corpse of Jimmy Graham somehow showing up to catch a touchdown pass. And I would be infuriated by that if the Saints had gone on to win. But instead I can sort of take heart in knowing that Sam LaPorta kind of smoked whatever Jimmy Graham now is on that field. Yeah. So,
no, he certainly did. He certainly won the tight end battle. It has been kind of a funny running joke this season because he's only been active for like 2 or 3 games, right? They signed him. He caught a preseason touchdown, and Ron and I kind of lost our minds with nostalgia. Then he was back, and he's a healthy scratch every week. And every week the first injury report comes out on Wednesday, and every week it says Jimmy Graham rest. Oh. And it's like, for what? Yeah.
Just it's like a cat that's got, like 16 years old.
Yeah. Does he have gout? Like what? What is he's?
Oh. What if he's
know,
practicing he's, really he's, hard and he needs to rest to practice the next week?
I don't know. I don't know what it is. I think he just is part of the dance squad on weeks where he's a healthy scratch or something.
No, I give that to you. As someone who just lived through like Miguel Cabrera's last season with the Detroit Tigers, not that he left and came back, but like it's cool to watch guys who used to be, you know, MVP caliber, like do just like a little bit of that magic again at the very end.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It feels good.
Yeah. It does. I think it was his only catch.
I think it was, yeah.
Boom, 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 boom. Boom, 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 boom. Welcome to Man in the Dome segment with our fan favorite and local favorite and favorite of everybody, Skooks. He was in the dome. He was there at the stadium. He was the man on the field. He was the closest to the action. And we want to pick his brain and find out what it was like in the stadium that day. Skooks, welcome to the podcast. And how are you feeling?
Well, it's always fun to be here. Thank you for having me again, Ron. Well, I don't. How are we feeling? Where do you want me to start with that?
Well, how about this? Start with the picture you sent us from the game.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, well, you know what? Let me start with this, actually, because we were talking about this for a second off mic, actually. This is a segment where we...
Why even ask?
This is
then?
A segment... This is a segment where we talk about the vibe in the dome, right?
So sure.
The vibe in the dome is like comes out of the vibe in the city, and I just want to tell you like a little bit about New Orleans this weekend. Probably a lot of your listeners are familiar with the shoestring operation that we run our pumps on here, where we keep the water out of the streets by like basically some invocation of the spirits and then turning a crank or something to
sure.
Whenever we're used to this over the last couple of years, over the last decade or so, especially whenever there's a heavy thunderstorm, the Sewage and Water Board has to put everyone on alert because it's antiquated equipment, its pumps and its electrical turbines that are, they don't communicate very well with one another because they're old technology versus new technology. There's got pieces that fall apart that they can't really fabricate anymore. And they just have to always be doing the upkeep on. Anyway, they're subject to like exploding or spewing oil everywhere or failing at any moment.
Yeah.
So whenever there's a...
It's like the end of a drug commercial.
Here, we're very familiar with all this. It's part of our culture now where we know that, like, we know the turbines. There are two that work now. There are turbines number 4 and turbine number 5. The other ones have been decommissioned or have exploded or have different histories. It's a
Skooks, you got to get past the throat clearing. Tell me about the fucking
I'm sorry. I should not have gotten started on.
I like this.
This
I know, but it turns the segment into a half hour.
We need more electrical talk. I because like everything is on 60 hertz, and like I heard these run on like lower hertz or something. I'm fascinated with it.
That's right. Yeah. That's exactly right. But I need to cut to the chase, okay. Right? So I do have a point that over the weekend we had a regular thunderstorm, but we did not get the all hands on deck alert from the NOLA Ready and everybody to tell us to move our cars to the neutral ground, which is the drill we normally do.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Nobody noticed, nobody cared. And sure enough, turbine 4 like failed and the water filled the streets and everybody's car was flooded and it was a big mess.
Shit.
Oh
shit. No.
The thing that's different about this particular episode is that no one even bothered. It's like the whole city is checked out. The mayor was in Dubai, ironically talking about how resilient the city is to climate. But the point I'm trying to make is that, yeah, this catastrophe that we're used to have happened again. And it's like we just didn't even try. Nobody tried. Yeah. And then sure enough, you know, the next day, Sunday, we walk into the Superdome, and it's 40% Lions fans.
Yeah.
The Saints fans aren't even bothering with this team anymore.
Let me just say that the picture that Skook sent us, the end zone looked like the beach, and the section behind the end zone looked like a beautiful crystal blue lake.
Yeah, I mean that is like that picture is very representative of what was going on. I would say 30-40% of the dome was visiting fans, and it felt at times like an away game. The Lions fans would go into their, you know, "Let's go Lions" chant, and it didn't just sound like some people in the dome were making that chant. It sounded like a crowd of Lions fans were like doing that in the dome.
Yeah.
It was pretty, pretty.
Well, I would imagine that any will to live that the Saints fans had was pretty well sucked out of them when we went down three touchdowns halfway into the first quarter.
Well, yeah, that's true. Although we did invent a new game. We really got into this thing where when they would rotate Taysom Hill into the game and pull Carr off, and then Taysom would come back the next play and Carr would walk back onto the field, it's very obvious what the Derek Carr is coming onto the field. People then knew to boo very loudly.
Yes. I love this game. Thank you for playing it.
Like, it was like they would do it. It's almost like they rotated Taysom in more often just to see if that would happen.
Like testing like Pavlov.
Yeah. It's like the wave, but like for against our own quarterback. It's very, I like it. It's fan entertainment.
And so that brings us to the kind of dramatic moment. He gets sacked. Mm-hmm. Was it on a sack or did he get the ball off? Either way, someone dropped a piano on him and he had to leave the field. How did the crowd react when Carr walked off concussed and holding his ribs?
Well, you know, thankfully, there wasn't kind of like, you know, classless cheering or anything like that. That has happened before. I think it happened in the 90s. The fans were done with Wade Wilson and he got hurt. And there was an episode where they, you know, there was.
I feel like booing him right now.
But no, I don't think that anybody really reacted badly to that. I mean, it's never fun to watch guys get mangled out there. It's, and Carr has gotten the crap beat out of him all year. And that's, you know, it just becomes a tragedy after a while.
Yeah.
Well, but were people excited for, as they even said, it's so funny that this is just the phrase that everyone uses. And it's not like, it's gone beyond a joke to being like an actual segment title, the Jameis Winston experience. Like when he came on the field, were people like, fuck yeah, shit's going to get wacky.
Yeah, were y'all excited?
No, but you know, at the point that Jameis came in the game, even though like it's a little deflating to see the starting quarterback go out because the Saints were coming back. Like we were in this game.
Sure, though I mean, he immediately like hit Olave on like a 30-yard pass to the two, and then they punched it in. So,
nobody felt bad until Jameis kind of, you know, we got bad Jameis after that. So,
yeah,
right.
It could have happened. It could have happened for him, and you know, that would have been a nice story, I guess.
Yeah, I wish.
I mean, I put in the, you know, and. The group DM, I just screenshot that was like the second, third, fourth down because I'm still smarting from that. Three open receivers with time to throw, and he just played some fucking pin the tail on the donkey shit where he just spun himself in a circle and then flung the ball nowhere near anyone. I'm still trying to process that I watched.
Yeah, those were terrible passes. Ugh.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Jameis unfortunately is not any different than Carr is as far as holding the ball too long and not really, you know, mm-hmm. read quickly enough to get the better of anybody. So it's more of that.
Did word get around the stadium about Michael Thomas tweeting? From
I mean, it got to me because I'm on my phone.
Right.
I enjoyed that. That was I, you know, Michael Thomas is a pretty honest guy. It's pretty good. But now he deleted his Twitter, so the world is a little less wealthy because of that.
Right. How about the defense? I mean, we were giving up big plays all game. I mean, we had stretches in the second half where we held them in check, but then of course not when we gave them great field position on turnovers and, you know, not when we needed the one last stop. Like, are people getting fed up with the defense now too?
I think so. And that's been the real reason that people are starting to call for Dennis Allen's firing at this point, because, you know, if a Dennis Allen team can't play defense, then, you know, what is the point of having a Dennis Allen? Yeah. They started off pretty bad and everybody was feeling that, but then when it felt like they were coming back, to give up that touchdown on the double reverse, I don't think people have any confidence in the defense anymore.
Did you see the injury list?
Yeah, it's not good. But that's the, you know.
And looks like they just reprinted the roster.
December in the NFL, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I mean, it was funny. I watched the people at New Orleans.football, and they're like, and here are the receivers. And they were, like, listing people who play for Tulane. And and then I was like, they didn't even say Bowden. Is he hurt? No, he's getting running back reps.
I was going to ask you if you expected Lynn Bowden Jr. to play as crucial a role in the offense at any point this year as he has. But
man, that's scary.
No, we already talked about the fact that he got more snaps than Olave last week because Olave got hurt.
And he's not a good returner either. I don't like the way he punt really. Returns or kick. I don't think he's good. Like I've seen too many good like kick returners and punt returners, and I know that's a position I know, and this guy does not have it. Get him off of there. Let somebody else give it a shot. Yeah.
They keep rotating Taysom in, but I think they're afraid he's gonna die. And he's like 80% of our offense.
Yep.
Now. You know, Taysom is what, 33 or something like that? I mean,
I don't know.
Got much
in football years, that's old.
Yeah, I don't think there's a whole lot left in the Taysom tube, and they're at the point where they're just squeezing it from the bottom now, seeing mm-hmm. what they can.
Yep, they folded it up. It's so when it all fell apart and they ended up losing, like, are people mad as they walk out, or is it just silence?
It's a kind of a tired resignation, I think. I got to tell you, it's hard to get a gauge when everybody sitting around you is in Detroit gear. And you're walking.
Oh, right. So they're pretty happy, I suppose.
They are pretty happy, except for some reason, some of them are trying to start fights anyway.
What?
Walking out of the dome, and there was a drunk Lions fan just shoving on people. And I don't know. I got out of there before it got bad or anything. But
yeah, that was going to be my next question. Were they arrogant about this win, or were they classy about it? Because we've stomped them every time they came here before. I've never seen what a victorious Lion fan would act like. I'd have no clue what that would look like ever.
But yeah, the guys sitting around me were pretty okay. And that's usually my experience with visiting fans. Normally they're pretty polite, and they're just happy to be in New Orleans, and who can blame them for that? But the guys around me were pretty good. There's some teams whose fans are kind of obnoxious that I don't care for, but Lions fans were okay, except for the people starting a fight outside.
Yeah.
But I don't know what's going to happen in the next couple weeks. It's really sad to see the dome taken over like that. It just doesn't feel like New Orleans. You know, we like to talk about how we support this team no matter how good or bad they are. And certainly was the case when I was growing up. It was kind of just like let's go have a party. We don't care if the team's even good. Nowadays, when it's so easy to flip your tickets online, people just, you know, piece right out of it. And there's no like street resale going on. And I think that really affects
it. Right.
So it's really sad.
The whole we don't care if we win or lose dies as soon as you get a taste of winning.
And I was gonna say, you got a lot of pressure to sell those tickets when they raise these ticket prices as high as they do. Because, like, I didn't start, even when I had tickets, I think the last 2 years, I would have to sell two or three games just to kind of not, you know, make up for anything, but just to, like, not take that financial hit, you know? So, like, man, you kind of have to do that. Benson did this to herself by raising them prices that high, in my opinion.
I mean, that's definitely part of the calculation that people go through. But I mean, at this point, if you're going to sell tickets, you probably aren't going to get much of a bundle for them online. So I don't know.
We got to take advantage of that.
Yes. Yes. Hell yeah.
We have a couple of home games in a row now, right? Our Carolinas, did we play them at home? No, or
it's this Carolina week? This week. Yeah. And then, I think the Giants, I think there's, we're going to see them, and then Atlanta towards the end of the season.
Remember when we felt good about the fact that we were going to play the Panthers and the Giants?
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah.
Those were good times, guys. Those were good times.
Oh, man. Yeah, those games could go either way now. I'd be shocked if we win both. I mean, we might win one, but I'd be shocked if we win both. And I won't be surprised if we lose both.
Winning those games would be the most depressing thing, frankly, because it'll be like, okay, well, still got to we can't decide if we hate the team or if we like the team, sitting in limbo. Much like this last game, you know, they started off by making everybody really mad, but then maybe we were watching something interesting. Instead, they came back and made us watch the rest of it.
Yeah.
Which also was not very satisfying. Yep. So
that's exactly that's exactly what I said on the main episode. Is that they really the most annoying thing was that they made me care again just to, you know, kick me back into the dirt.
And I was surprised how quickly I cared about them, because once they scored that one touchdown, I was back in it. Like, we were down 21-0. I was laughing. I was like, fuck this. This is just funny now. This is just funny bullshit now. I can watch this. And when we scored a touchdown, I was like, oh, man, maybe we got – and then, like, I hate how quick they could bring me back into it. I am a sucker.
Me too. I am such an easy mark, man. I want it too badly. That's how I know I'll never get away, is that I'm such a sucker.
Well, get ready for more of that, because I think you're going to have to watch the rest of this season.
I gave Jimmy Graham a make-a-wish touchdown, and now I'm like...
Yeah, now he's like on the injury report, too. For what? Like, I think it said rest or something? I don't know.
No, he always rests on Wednesday. Okay. Dennis Allen finally answered that question. And he's like, you know, it's veterans privilege that he, you know, doesn't have to come in on Wednesday. All right. Thank you so much, Skooks. Hopefully it'll be less morose after the Panthers game.
Well, this is always fun either way. So, you know, thanks for doing this, y'all.
Thanks for coming on.
Man in the dome.
Did you guys see when Taysom Hill scored the touchdown and they cut to a fan that had a sign that said, "Taysom, my daughter is named Taysom," with a Y?
That was the funniest shit. Like, cause like Taysom is a weird spelled Mormon name, and they're now they're getting like derivatives of weird Mormon names. Where does this end? Like, this could just get too weird.
I was horrified at first, but then I did think about it, and I guess if you are going to name your daughter after a Saints backup quarterback, that is not the worst you could do.
It was... I mean, otherwise it's Billy Joe. I guess we're far enough south that you can name your daughter Billy Joe in parts of Louisiana, but still unnatural to my Brooklyn ears. People, of course, someone screen capped it and tweeted at me and asked if Saints fans were okay, to which I immediately responded, "We are not."
Have you guys ever met any other Taysoms besides Taysom?
No. No, neither has he. I can't imagine. You know, there are now two.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're separated by 26 years. No, there's no way they're not going to get the two of them together. They will track her down.
If you were going to name your daughter after any member of the Saints, past or present, who would you pick? Ooh.
I think Werfel is a beautiful name for a girl. For Danny. No, I'm just kidding. No.
Yeah, immediately I thought of the dumbest name would be Russ Erxlabin. But...
You know what I think might not totally fail is McAllister. I think
that McAllister is good.
A first name.
McAllister,
That sounds like
McAllister Woodward.
Yeah, that's a Mormon name, it sounds like, but you'd have to spell it weird. Yeah. Yeah.
I like Callie for short.
Yeah, McCallum. That's really good.
Sorry, I just saw the roster in front of me, and what jumped out was Pete, which is spelled P-E-A-T, yeah. Which has to be the worst possible name. No, McAllister is great. A good name. Hébert is also not terrible, actually.
That's everybody's name down here.
The Frenchness of it sounds fancy.
There's a million names. No, last name.
Really?
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, of course.
I could throw a rock and hit an Hébert right now.
I could throw a rock and hit a car.
That's good. We should. We have one of those too.
Everything's we got a car. Really
we got a David Carr. You should throw a rock and hit that David Carr. He's already. Oh,
damn it. He couldn't hit me coming back. I'll tell you that.
That car is a lemon.
That's enough. By the way, speaking of names from the past, I knew he was active because I knew that we had signed him. But Marcus Callaway was back on the team.
Hmm.
And I knew we'd signed him because of all the injuries. Yeah. But I figured he must not have been in the game because I did not see his name, even walking back to the huddle.
Yeah.
oh, Callaway. There's nothing. So here's a good question about this game, Lauren. When did you think you had it wrapped up? Because I could tell you when I knew we lost.
Oh, I mean, like, wrapped up, it would be when they completed the pass with under 2 minutes left to get the first. Yeah.
Okay, no. I mean the one where you were, like, flying high, and you're like, this is it.
Oh,
before it fell apart.
Who got the third touchdown? Was it James? Or no, it was Amon-Ra who got the third one. And then, mm-hmm. Yeah, when the Saints just, like, did not tackle him. They just kind of like played two-hand touch with mm-hmm. him on that run into the end zone. I was like, this is a very unserious team.
Yeah.
It didn't look as bad on the replay than it did live.
Mm. I will say also, I just have red zone because I get stuck with the Jets and Giants game, so I couldn't watch like all 60 minutes. So I did. I got like the highs and lows like packaged to me more than every single play. But I think I got the gist.
Yeah.
I knew it was over when they took a false start on the first play of the game and then ran Montgomery up the gut three times and got a first down.
Did you ever have like a we're so back moment, like on the Olave touchdown or anything?
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. I mean, I kept,
So you still had belief?
Mm-hmm. I didn't until, because the Taysom Hill touchdown brought it to within three. And I was like, all right, we may actually pull this off. And then we immediately gave up a field goal. Yeah. Like that
was the fumble followed that up right after?
Yes. I think so, right? We fumbled it.
Because that was such a sigh of relief, the fumble at the snap. Yeah. That was like when I stopped just like tensing and refreshing my phone.
That's when he turned and smacked his lineman who knocked it out of his hands. Yeah, I mean, that is what it is. You got the field goal, we fumbled, and then you got the touchdown or something right after it. And that was just dispiriting.
Yeah.
But it was the three runs. It was the three runs up the gut, and I was like, oh, shit, this is no good.
Yeah, this is
and then we immediately committed a personal foul.
This is the first Lions team, because I remember Barry Sanders as like a guy that existed. I don't really remember watching him. And this is the first Lions team ever where I really enjoy watching them run the football. Mm. Like I can just like appreciate the vision that those guys have. And I think Daryl Johnson, whoever was on the call, referred to Jameer Gibbs, quote, non-fragility, unquote. that's also something that I appreciate about him, his non-fragility. Yeah.
It was crazy seeing him Moose that old. Like I just, it made me feel old because I remember watching that guy play. That's the Cowboys fullback, right? The announcer, Dow Johnston.
Yeah.
Yeah. He looks like an old man now, and I just, that shouldn't be. I don't know why. It just bothers me. It's like
I no longer notice players being old.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a very brutal way to start the game. We let you fly down for the touchdown and then threw a pick on the first play, which was very annoying, especially because I couldn't blame it on Carr. I always want to blame the interceptions on Carr. And he has done his share of frustrating Juwan Johnson. But he hit Johnson in the hands. And it still went for what was actually a beautiful interception that I would appreciate more if it weren't in my face.
That's still kind of Carr's fault because A.T. Perry, wasn't he wide open on that play?
Yes, Michael Thomas tweeted that.
Yeah.
But if they showed that on a replay, I was too busy.
They did.
Getting another drink or something.
They showed it. He was wide open. I mean, I think he ran like an out route, like kind of like a flag route, you know, and he might have, it could have been a touchdown even. He was that open. He got behind a defender and the safety was way on the other side of the field, and he just checked down to Juwan Johnson, and that happened. So it's still a little bit on Carr, I think. So you can still blame him. I know you want to blame him. You should feel good and blame him, Charles. That's his fault.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
I will. I will. We have come together in this time of need and solved my problem by blaming Derek Carr. I can never hear the broadcast because you will not be surprised to find that on Flatbush Avenue, the TV with audio is not the Saints Lions game. And so the only thing I remember from the call is when Derek Carr went out and the closed captioning referred to the Jameis Winston experience.
Oh, my God. I was going to bring that up, too.
Yes.
Because that was on – I remember it from the Olave touchdown, which was brutal and another time would have made me, like, write off the Lions entirely. But Joe Davis, whoever was on the call, was like – the Jameis Winston experience never fails. And I didn't really have any sense of what that was supposed to mean.
Yeah. And then they hit him with like random facts. They're like, he's the only guy to throw 30 interceptions and 30 touchdowns. And he's the only guy to, you know, headbutt the ball down the field like a hacky sack while he's scrambling for a touchdown. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's the only guy to hand the ball right to the linebacker because it was his birthday. You know, it's like, what are we in for here? I love it. I look forward to Jameis time now, especially this season.
This is the most heartbreaking part about deciding to believe. We got within three. We gave up another field goal. We had a drive to actually take the lead or win the game. We had the ball, and Jameis had a chance, and he threw three incomplete passes to three wide-open receivers who did not have the most remote chance to catch the ball. And I just screamed, you know, like that. They're used to doing this.
Yeah, it was so bad that it made Michael Thomas delete his account because, like, the last tweet he wrote was like, "God is with Jameis." And then when he saw that, he was like, "I can't even do Twitter no more." He just deleted his entire account. That's how bad those passes were.
I mean, that is really where our season is, where the players on the team are now kind of openly revolting against the quarterback, which hasn't happened since Colin Kaepernick kneeled. And Drew Brees said flag 30 times to a church choir or something. But like Kamara clearly is like revolting against Allen. And I don't think that people are really enjoying playing for Carr much.
Yeah.
So obviously Winston missed those passes late. You mentioned that. Would you have rather had Carr in then? Or is it just kind of, it doesn't matter, it's all bad?
I still say no. I'd rather lose that way with James. That's how much I detest Carr. I don't know. I don't know. What do you think, Joe?
Same thing. Carr has not been accurate, you know? Like, he throws a pretty good deep ball, and he can throw a screen with every Bailey Zappi in the league, but all the stuff where players are moving laterally and he has to hit them on the move by leading them a little, nope.
Yeah.
Nope. He misses all of those except for the one where he hit Juwan Johnson in the hands. And so I think it goes just as bad, except I'm not thinking about how I detest the quarterback personally. For really showing starkly how much moral compromise is required to be a sports fan, which is what I think every time I see Jameis Winston in black and gold.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, this is a thing I have to forget. And then when he's bad, I'm like, why am I even forgetting this guy?
That's the good thing about the fans booing Carr, though, because like they kind of like take the place of my... I was like, that was felt very cathartic to me. I liked hearing the fans boo. I was like, I want to be in the dome booing him. It's like the Greek chorus or something, like, or like the laugh track on the thing. Like, I want the other to be my voice and like tell Carr how much he sucks. And I'm glad that they booed him, and I hope they keep booing his ass. I don't know if he'll even play again. He seems pretty messed up.
Do you think you will get out to Detroit for a game this year?
Honestly, I was never really like a Lions, like an NFL game goer, even when I was growing up there. I was just back there, and I will be back there again for Christmas, but I was back there because a friend of mine was getting married, and I just stuck around for Thanksgiving, so it was kind of an extended visit where I got to like take the temperature. It's very, very unfamiliar to me, the whole vibe around the Lions. I mean, it's very excited, but it's also like, I have this weird feeling where I'm like the only person who remembers the Matthew Stafford era. Like there's all this talk of, wow, the Lions are finally good and they're finally winning. And then the worst is when they like tie it in with the quote unquote recovery of the city of Detroit, which is like, it's done, it's fine, it's just a city now. But like, I was hearing that about Stafford in like 2011, and it's like, I'm getting the same thing about this team and Dan Campbell. And it's just weird because, like, it's great that they're doing so well, and it's great that everyone's excited, and they're a fun team to watch, especially compared to the last 5 years. But, like, they have not yet eclipsed what the Stafford group did three times, which is make the playoffs. And I think it's – I don't know. It just seems like everyone kind of forgot about that time. Mm-hmm. And I'm the only one that's kind of a little more wait and see.
Yeah,
or just like not anointing them as like a first round bye kind of 14 win team or whatever.
As a local hero once said, lose yourself.
Yeah.
In the moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I do think I'm better though, because everyone else now is like, gets angry when the Lions don't play well. And I have just never been able to do that. It's like a switch has been flipped where, you know, for a long time, everyone just accepted that the Lions would by default play poorly. But now it's like, you know, the Bears game and then the Packers game and now this past game, it's like people get upset when they don't score or when they allow points. And it's like whatever part of your brain gets mad at that. Like I did not develop that in the 2000s. So I just kind of take it as it comes.
Yeah.
I was going to say, that's what I love about Lions fans, because like, I remember it was a regular season game that mirrored this one in the dome. I was at that game. I can't tell you what year it was, but we started out like smoking the Lions. And I was sitting next to some Lions fans, and they were just chuckling. They were getting drunk. They were having the best time. They were having just as much fun as we was having. And like, y'all getting the brakes beat off y'all. And then the Lions start coming back. And then we started getting nervous. It was me and Chris. And I'm getting anxiety, and the Lions fans turned to us, and they just they were the sweetest men. They were like, calm down. We're going to blow this. Don't worry. Like, it's fine. Like, we will lose this game. Relax. And they really, like, eased me, like, all right, yeah, we got this. And then, of course, the Lions blew it the same way we blew it yesterday. And then it was, like, almost like the mirror type of game. You probably go back in, like, the stat sheet and find out what year that happened. But it was it felt identical, but flipped, you know. And that's why I've loved Lions fans since then. Like, I never felt cared for in the dome by an opposing team like that, you know. They were very encouraging. Yeah.
If you want the opposite of that experience in Michigan, you go to a Michigan football game where everyone is just immediately furious, even when they're winning.
God damn.
Yeah. A good friend of mine was a freshman the Appalachian State year. And so, like, I think that may have been his first or second home game. And I was like, oh, man. But that was kind of the quintessential Michigan experience for a while, though usually the season didn't blow up that early. early. Mm-hmm. Like it was like a lot of promise and then something stupid going wrong against Iowa or Purdue or some, you know, nonsense, whatever, where everyone knew they were actually genuinely an elite team doomed to make their fans angry.
I was at the Michigan State game that they lost on the trouble with the snap. They were punting it away with like 10 seconds left or whatever. And Michigan State blocked it and returned it, or recovered it and returned it for a touchdown. I was right in front of that end zone.
Wasn't that a punter with like a kind of Slavic name? Or something where there's like a photo of him like looking, like a really famous photo of him like looking back in a panic.
That's an older punter because I know exactly what you're talking about, but that was, that predates my time there, but I forget who it was.
I mean, it's just like really sad because, you know, usually you can't really see their faces. And on this one, it's like they shot it with the kind of satellites the CIA only has access to, and the clarity of the terror on that poor kid's face is alarming.
It's a really unifying force, the Lions, like the expectation that the Lions are going to blow it, and it has been my whole life, and it is just like now weird to be in a spot where it's like people very clearly are not expecting the Lions to blow it, and I don't I don't know if I prefer that, honestly.
Yeah.
I don't know if it makes us better people.
This game was a weird one to watch because my son has a fantasy team that is Lions stacked. He's got two teams, and one of them has Laporta and Montgomery, and the other one has Amon-Ra.
This is your son Taysom?
Yes, this is my son Taysom. we call him Beer Man. He's a Saints fan like me. I have poisoned him in that way. And so he was like really, you know, the first touchdown was his guy, but it's like bittersweet. And then the second touchdown was his guy, and it's like still kind of bittersweet. And then the third one is his guy. And at that point, I'm like, I give you license to only root for your fantasy team. It's like 21-0 halfway through the first quarter. You can only worry about like Laporta getting 200 yards or something like that. And then they actually come back just, you know, real Godfather 3 shit. Like, I'm supposed to not care about this game anymore. And then as soon as I care about the game again, they do like completely fantastic bullshit to like blow it up in a really spectacular way. And I was just like, that's this year. You know, like as frustrating as this is how we play against, you know, Houston. We played like this against Jacksonville, though we won that one. Well, no, we lost that.
Yeah. We should have won that. It felt like this. Yeah.
One Indianapolis. Like all these games against mediocre teams. We're 5-7. We have our closing schedule is kept like three division games, Carolina, Atlanta, and Tampa, plus the Giants and the Rams. And I am worried about the Giants game. How did that happen? That's so depressing.
Yeah.
I am now starting to think that we may actually be able to draft a quarterback.
Let's get that kid from LSU, Daniels.
Yeah, man. If they take Jaden Daniels, I'd be very happy.
I don't even like LSU, but I'd be over the moon for that.
Which reminds me, we gotta tell everyone that Nicholls State beat LSU in basketball. We never mentioned that on the podcast. Yeah.
That's my alma mater.
You know, and so shout out to the Colonels for knocking off the Tigers. I was looking over our play time, and this team is sad, man. This is really sad. You know, Olave got hurt, so he had fewer snaps than Bowden. What?
Yeah.
Can't get Trevor Penning. In any, he plays four snaps, and it's all on special teams. right? So he gets fewer snaps than our punter because he's not in on all of the punts. He was a first-round pick.
Yeah. He doesn't even play anymore. I don't even know. And they haven't given a reason why they're not playing him either, right? Like, when I just...
No, just pure skill issue. He's just got good seats.
Yeah.
But he earned it, you know, like the first couple of weeks, the line was a total nightmare. Then he had one decent game, and then like it was like a joke about pad level is that people kept hitting him and putting him on skates. Yeah. It's like, you can't do that as a first round pick, especially when the only thing you're ever been in the paper for is getting in a fight because you like tried to cut the Achilles tendon of your teammate in preseason.
his only skill is getting mad, but losing. Yeah, so it's, I don't know. He's like the Hulk, but like if the Hulk was bad at football, I guess. I don't know.
Like, what if Richie Incognito couldn't
walk? And we took him in the first round.
I don't even remember the joke that I said while we were
It was funny as shit. You said that like if Penning gets in the game once, like that's like 30 more days of winter. It's like he's the ground.
There are people who I didn't even know were on the roster. There's a guy named T. Summers. I don't know the first name. He played 20 snaps. Mm-hmm. On special teams.
They're just making up guys now. Like, yeah, you had a guy named Sewell. I didn't even know we had a guy named Sewell.
Yeah, Nephi Sewell.
He was a guy.
They had a bunch of goal line snaps, and they still haven't let us fridge.
I know.
You got to give the ball to, you know, did you notice Colin Saunders, number 99, would go in at fullback in the goal line package? And so he is one of our defensive linemen. And they've started using him as a goal line fullback.
It's so exciting.
And I want him to get a handoff or a direct snap. That would make my day.
I want him to catch a pass. He's like a big old guy. I want him to get the ball.
They ran a kind of decoy with him where I, you know, like they had him block right on the touchdown and then Taysom ran left. And I'm like, they're setting it up, man. They're going to throw a touchdown pass to Colin Saunders, and it'll redeem the whole season. Because even though that's incredibly Reddit, I just need that in my life.
Yeah, same.
What are you looking forward to for the rest of the season, Arn? You obviously have playoffs on your mind, which the team has earned.
The goal is a home playoff game specifically. So coincidentally, I was thinking about this before we did this, that the very first playoff game of my life, I don't know if it even registers to you guys, if you guys remember it, but it was, I think, 2011 in the first round against the Saints.
Yes, I was there.
Okay. Yeah, the Lions got... I mean, like, I had no expectations going into that game. I didn't, you know, expect them to do all that much, and they, you know, got overpowered by Jimmy Graham and the Saints offense. Yeah. But there's at New Orleans, and then there's at Dallas, and then there's at Seattle, and that's the three playoff games of my lifetime. And so having potentially a playoff game in Detroit would just be like just an extremely cool thing for everyone who is who is stuck by that team. And the tickets are already like insane. It's like, you know, it was $500 to get into the Monday night game, and it's only going to get higher if they keep winning. So I wish there was a way that, you know, people who don't have that kind of money could go, but the season ticket holders are definitely the ones who have held their tickets for a long time, at least, are getting their payoff.
Yeah. I mean, I remember the Detroit game. I remember, obviously, the next game more, which was when Marcus Colston threw the forward pass on the lateral play to end the game when we were down by 8 to that, you know, Legion of Boom Seattle team. By the same token, Ron and I are going to the last game of the year. I'm flying down to New Orleans, and we're going to go to the Atlanta game. Hopefully, it won't be for the first pick of the draft. But we have not bought tickets yet, and I think they are now selling them as a BOGO. So we're looking forward to that. Yeah. We're looking forward to getting two tickets on the 50-yard line and a timeshare for the low price of
$1. Yeah, they're getting cheaper every week.
The Falcons are like a road not taken for me because my younger brother, just because the Lions gave us absolutely nothing through the 2000s, he became like a really, really hardcore Atlanta Falcons fan to the point where like that is its own kind of misery and heartbreak, which he did not know he was signing up for. But like we went down to Cleveland for a game in like 2010, and he'll still go to like Lions Falcons games specifically where he adopted them as his team. But I never went that road.
Yeah. And is he still?
Yeah.
Is he still like a hardcore Falcons fan?
Yeah, he's stuck by them. I think it's like softened a little with the Lions and with, you know, if you're not local and the team's not like regularly on primetime, it's a little harder to follow them. But yeah, he would still say he's a Falcons fan for sure.
Well, then you can tell him to go straight. No. It just gets, all of a sudden the interview gets really awesome. So we are around the hour mark. So do you have any special projects in the work, things you're working on that we should be looking for?
I got the elevator moving right next to me.
And now we all with bated breath wait for Ray Ratto.
Okay, it's stopping at the floor below me. So that's one thing that's in the works. But otherwise, I'm not on Twitter anymore, or I technically am on Twitter, but I don't post there. So I'm on Blue Sky at my name, Lauren Tyson. You can follow my work. Do you hear that again?
I did.
The motor. I'm just going to talk through it. Defector.com, I'm a co-owner. It's been around for over 3 years now. It's worker owned. It's just been a really, really cool experience.
I read the annual report.
Annual report was good. People like reading the report. It's and it's, you know, it's one of the few media places that is not doing layoffs right now, which is
awesome.
Awful, but it gives a lot of weight to what we do, and it, you know, puts a lot of responsibility on us. And I, you know, think that we keep trying to make it better and better. So Defector, it's a good website.
Yeah, it is.
I have this popped into my head, actually. We don't have to end right this second, but there was a joke that I was going to end with that I remembered from when I was younger. But if there's anything else you want to get to, we can end on the joke.
Let's hear it.
Oh, so I grew up in the Catholic Church, and so we'd go on Sundays, and so it was like we'd go like 12:30 Mass and then like turn on the Lions game on the radio on the way home. But, you know, it was like a known thing that the Lions would be playing. And anyway, I remember one time at the end of Mass, the priest starts telling a joke. A guy goes into a barbershop with his dog, and there's the Lions game is on the corner on the TV. And so he starts getting a haircut, and the dog's hanging out there, and the Lions kick a field goal. And the dog just goes nuts. He's jumping around, he's barking, he's just running around, so, so excited. And the barber asks the guy, "God, that's crazy. What do you do when he scores a touchdown?" And the guy said, "I don't know. I only got him last year."
Well, that dog had some fun yesterday.
Yeah.
Let me tell you. So you knew this at the beginning. And so as we come to the end, you know that it means sad horns for us.
Okay.
And so you can either do the sad horns along with us, you can trash talk us while we play, or you can syncopate with happier horns. You're free to do whatever you want. We are liberated in that sense.
My trash talk would just be like reading the scoring somewhere.
That'd be pretty
which
good.
Which I do have in front
good.
Of me. Okay.
But before we do that, Ron, do you have any closing thoughts?
I don't have any closing thoughts. I had a quick hot take, and I'll just be quick with it, like an idea. Like I figured out what Dennis Allen and Derek Carr are. They're just bad Santa. They go team to team, robbing everybody. Right? They are a team. I haven't got everybody complete, but I like definitely Billy Bob Thornton is Derek Carr, and the elf is Dennis Allen, and sure, the wife might be Foster Moreau. I don't know how I'm going with it, but like they're just hustling teams and getting and stealing from different football teams going around the country, and that's who they are. I don't know who Bernie Mac or John Ritter are yet in this analogy, but I just had thought of it a couple minutes ago. But that's my last thought on this.
This team does not have a Bernie Mac. We do not, as Alvin Kamara said, the team does not have.
It doesn't.
How much of a game do the New Orleans Saints play on any Sunday?
Half. Yeah. Oh shit, it's going.
All right. So let's give Lauren a sad horn serenade as we go out. 3, 2, 1.
Boom, 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 boom. David Montgomery, 2 yard rush, 7-0. Sam LaPorta, 13-yard pass from Jared Goff, 14-0. Amon-Ra St. Brown, 25-yard pass from Jared Goff, 21-0. Riley Patterson, 26-yard field goal, 24-7. Riley Patterson, 32-yard field goal, 27-21. Jameson Williams, 19-yard rush, 33-21.
Man, that hurts. Thank you so much to Lauren Tyson for joining us this week on City Saint and Country Saint. Thank you, as always, to my good friend L. Ron Mexico. And thank you to Lunar Snow, who has to clean up everyone's audio from the various echo chambers. See you next week.
Thank you.
Have a good
one. Hi, y'all.
Who dat?
Go Lions.